Hello and welcome to episode 36 of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And in this episode, I've got the opportunity to chat with Jackie Giroggi, who's Director of Strategy at the University of Salford. We learn about Jackie's position as Director of Strategy, which represents a distinctive and wide-ranging role, and one she hugely enjoys. Discussing her unusual career journey, we hear how she started out with British Steel in Corby on a graduate entry finance track before a move to a porter cabin and even more glamorous Hartlepool, where she was issued with steel toe cap boots, hard hat and a high-vis jacket. Having qualified as an accountant, Jackie then landed at Northumbria to begin her higher education career journey and experienced something of a culture shock as she encountered the world of university committees for the first time. Switching between finance and planning roles during a time at Northumbria, and also having three children too, Jackie then made the move into a strategic planning role at Manchester Met before heading to Salford as director. Reflecting on her university's COVID experience, Jackie's rightly proud of what staff and students have done, particularly given that Salford's a big provider of health professionals who all stepped up. Looking beyond Salford, we talk about Jackie's role in HESPA, the National Grouping of Strategic Planners, and its role in engaging with authority to agencies and regulators in language they understand, among other things. Finally, we turn to the national picture, university funding, social mobility, the regulatory environment, and the importance of connecting to local communities. And Jackie concludes by noting that when she joined higher education in 2003, it really didn't feel like a golden age, but in hindsight, it probably was something a little more positive than where we are now. I do hope you enjoy it.
Right, well, welcome everyone to the latest edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And for this episode, it's my enormous pleasure to be talking to Jackie Giroggi from the University of Salford, where she is Director of Strategy. So welcome, Jackie. It's great to have you with us. And tell me first off, right, what does a Director of Strategy actually do at Salford?
Well, thank you, Paul. And obviously, I'm delighted to be having this discussion. And, you know, I actually think Director of Strategy is a brilliant job title because it can cover all kinds of areas and you can get involved in some really interesting projects. So officially, I look after policy, planning, data analysis and risk. And those of you that see my Twitter bio will see that I have a pathological hate of anything that's shaped like a pie chart. So real focus on the data analysis. And, you know, clearly there's not much going on in terms of policy analysis right now. Not much to look at. So the team are kept pretty busy on that front, making sure that we respond to all the consultations in a timely way. But really, really enjoy my work at Salford because it was the first Director of Strategy post. It brought together the teams in a slightly different configuration. And it's absolutely a space where we can look at things in a different way.
So we'll talk in a minute about the kind of wider community outside Salford, because I think the kind of the planning landscape and the strategy landscape in UK higher education is a very interesting one. You obviously play an active role in that. But in terms of, you know, again, you and your role, how you've been in that job a few years now, but how did you end up there? What was your career path? Because it wasn't a typical administrative route, was it?
No, and I'm smiling as you use the word career path, because that, you know, even though I am an expert in planning because of the role, that would kind of insinuate some predetermined plan, which that was absolutely not the case. If I go right back to the beginning, I was at a Scottish university, you know, kind of back in the day, wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, got to be honest. And it was in the golden era of a graduate milk round, and British Steel came all the way up to my Scottish university. And I thought, well, actually, being involved in an industry that manufactures things might be quite interesting. So I ended up on a finance graduate track in British Steel. So my first posting was in Corby in North Hants, which just caused some confusion for me because there was a lot of people that moved from Glasgow to Corby to support steel industry. So actually, if you walk the streets of Corby, back in the late 90s, it felt and sounded very much like Glasgow. So that was quite interesting. And then I was posted in Hartlepool on the northeast coast, working for the oil and gas pipeline division back in the day. And actually, if you drove into the Hartlepool steel plant, it was past ICI and Seal Sands and the nuclear plant. And what one of my colleagues explained to me that I hadn't realised was, like, some of the Blade Runner films and kind of Ridley Scott, his landscape was based on that landscape in Teesside as you drive into Hartlepool, because he went to Hartlepool College to do film and media studies. Which,
wow. Well, I didn't know that, but I mean, you're really painting a very glamorous picture of steel lifestyle.
I wouldn't necessarily use the word glamorous. I worked in a porter cabin that was attached to a steel mill, and when the pipes were running through, the porter cabin used to shake and all the kind of dust came off it, so I won't describe it as glamorous. But I did have my own steel toe cap boots, high-vis jacket and a hard hat when I went through the plant. And I was there for about 5 or 6 years, hugely enjoyed it. But your kind of path was plotted out, and it was like, oh, well, you know, after you've done this role in this company, you'll move to South Wales and then you'll take a financial controller role and then you'll do some work in head office. And it all felt quite prescribed. And even though the work was kind of really enjoyable and I've got my accountancy qualification, I just started to question where I was going. So I had a look once I'd gained my accountancy letters around where I might move to next, and so there was a couple of jobs came up in Newcastle, and there was a job that came up in a manufacturing firm that looked entirely sane and reasonable. And then the headhunters also said, well, if you could thought about public sector, that I'd look really good on your CV if you do it for 2 or 3 years. And I thought, oh, that's an excellent idea. He said, and funnily enough, I've got a project accountant role up at Northumbria University. So I thought, yeah, I'll go and have a look. So I got offered the role at Northumbria. It was a little bit of a culture shock, and I could probably remove the words little bit from that sentence, because I literally finished at Hartlepool Steel Mill on the Friday and joined Northumbria University on the Monday morning.
Still in your hard hat and your steel toe cap boots?
Pretty much still in my hard hat and my steel toe cap boots. And I was introduced to the world of committees. And I found this such a strange concept. So in the steel mill, we all used to stand around the table on a Monday morning and have a management meeting. Nobody wrote everything down. We all just agreed it and kind of got on with it for the next week. So even just seeing minutes, and I was like, well, what are the minutes for? And they said, well, they're to tell you what was said. And I'm like, but do people not just remember? You know, why are we writing it all down? So I did struggle a bit with the concept of committees. But actually, once I was kind of into the swing of things, and it did take a bit of time, I thought this was a really amazing place, because actually your ability to drive through transformation, come up with different projects and come up with things that were directly impacting students' lives was just really good. But because I was a bit unsure about where I wanted to go, I kind of switched between finance and planning roles for about 7 or 10 years. And I had an extremely tolerant and patient boss who let me do that. Because what would happen is, I'd really like the structure of finance, and you know, you kind of control all the resources, so you know, it's, you always have a very productive conversation. But then, and no disrespect to my finance colleagues, I'd be like, oh, well, I want to do something that's a bit more interesting and a bit less rule bound. And then I'd kind of move into the planning space, and then I'd go, oh, but I really miss the structure of finance, so I kind of move kind of back into those roles. So Northumbria was absolutely fantastic in kind of supporting those different posts, because I know that's not something that's common across the sector. And then kind of I had my three daughters while we were up in Newcastle, but it's always tough, you know, kind of having a full-time career and kids. So I started to look to Manchester to see if I could go more towards kind of some family support, and a role came up at MMU, and that was a straight head of strategic planning. So I ended up working there probably for about 5 or 6 years before the move through to Salford. But I've never kind of left finance behind. So because I don't have enough to do as a working mum with three daughters and a full-time job, I'm also an NHS non-exec, so a chair of finance and investment committee, and I'm vice chair of the full board. And previous to that, I was chair of audit on the Greater Manchester Waste Disposal Authority, which might sound a bit like The Sopranos, but it was actually the biggest PFI in the kind of north. It was 4.7 billion, so quite big and complex. So I did that for a bit. And I'm also deputy chair of the Higher Education Strategic Planning Association. So yeah, kind of.
So that keeps you all busy then. And then you joined Salford and you did all these other things as well. So on the, I mean, that moving about between finance and planning is really unusual, isn't it? Right? Because quite often you get a bit of tension between the two areas, don't you? They're bumping up against each other, right? So you played it from both sides. So, who's right and who's wrong?
Well, obviously, strategy is always right, Paul. But, for me, actually, it's been really helpful having that finance background. Yeah. I'm a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Management and Accountants, so I can talk finance with the best of them. I've chaired audit committees, so I really understand, how to structure a balance sheet. And I think, actually where some of that tension comes from is because you're almost talking in different languages. Finance colleagues are absolutely about financial control, complying with the financial regs, making sure we've got prudence and resilience built in to those financial forecasts. And strategy and strategic planning is more about taking those measured risks and looking for those resources to underpin those business cases that kind of can be taken forward. But I've always felt it's been really productive that I can almost straddle both sides, because I can still write, touch wood, a fairly coherent business case. I can still more or less have a look at a financial forecast and work out, how we need to take it forward. But I think there's something where I've ended up brokering those relationships, both between kind of finance colleagues and strategic planning colleagues. And it's useful to be able to do that translation in the middle.
And I have to say, I think it is hugely important that those teams do actually work in tandem together, because if they don't, it can be really problematic and really, quite unhelpfully, challenging. So I think being in that position where you know the language that both of them speak and you're able to bring them together is really, really important.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
Yeah, but it does make me smile, because I did financial forecasts, longitudinal financial forecasts, for a very long time, because I used to be financial planning and analysis manager. So you always did kind of those big financial forecasts. And what struck me both in the management teams and in the kind of council committees was that I always got very few questions on these financial forecasts. And, it did strike me that the assumptions were always good, but they were assumptions and constructed assumptions. What I noticed when I moved into student number planning was that everybody's an expert. And I went from having no questions on a financial forecasting to almost having exponential questions on a student number forecast, which was actually incredibly robust. And that was really interesting to me, because there was something in the mystery of finance that meant you maybe didn't get those questions coming through.
That's really fascinating. And I think you're right, is that colleagues around the university will feel a much safer ground questioning and challenging student numbers, because they think they know it all. Whereas with finance, they're really anxious about being found out as being financially illiterate, or at least financially underdeveloped, shall we say. That's a really, and of course a real challenge often for people in your position is that to avoid the difficult stuff, people will argue about the very small number at the bottom and spend ages trying to challenge it, won't they?
Yeah, and I call the phenomena spreadsheet rustling. And you know, you kind of walk into a meeting and you're talking through some data and you just hear something in the corner. And you know, I think where I've worked very hard, well, in all my roles, both at Salford and MMU, is to create that confidence in the data, and you know, make sure that you know that we're working to one set of data definitions and that they are clearly understood. But I think definitely the thing that I've reflected on as I've matured through my different roles is when I started in finance, I couldn't ever understand why you'd ever need anything apart from a sound, well-produced table. You know, everybody understands the table. It's got the correct headings. You've got the categories going around the left-hand side. Yeah. Why on earth would you need anything else? And certainly as I've gone through my career now, I've understood that some people like to absorb information through a narrative. Some people might prefer to see it charted, you know, and some people will prefer to see it in a table. So, and I think it's kind of understanding that you have to give that information to different people in different ways if you want to get to that right decision at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So moving on to kind of slightly different topic, we've all been through, you know, kind of 2 years of COVID, which has had a kind of cyclical set of challenges for universities. But we are, you know, hopefully fingers crossed, and obviously, you know, government has determined we're very much coming out the other side of it now, notwithstanding some data which isn't wholly confirming that. But anyway, but things are changing, and you know, obviously the situation has undoubtedly improved a bit. So what's your perspective on, you know, kind of what you've been through, and but also how the university, how Salford is kind of getting back to kind of normal, in inverted commas, business? What does it feel like from your perspective?
I'm really proud of what both the staff and students have done through this period. You know, Salford's one of the biggest providers of allied health in the UK, and what we saw were our students out on the front line in the NHS, and that was just, you know, really amazing. Again, our colleagues across the kind of university stepping up really fast to make sure we've got the digital infrastructure, you know, and, you know, our academic colleagues, you know, making sure that the content was there for students. You know, everybody worked amazingly hard. And we should recognise that and be proud of that. You know, I think sometimes the sector is a bit apologetic on some of its achievements, but actually that was, you know, phenomenal. And I think when we move into, you know, I hate all the phrases, you know, I'm a strategist, but the new normal post-pandemic, paradigm shift, whatever you want to call it, I just think we need to kind of hang on to the things that were great and make sure we carry those through. I think virtual's going to be really interesting. And, you know, some of this is anecdotal, but, you know, we definitely saw different types of student engagement across the virtual environment. You know, anecdotally, students were more likely to post questions in chat than maybe raise their hands in a seminar. And, you know, we want to kind of hang on to some of the things that work really well. I think, you know, we also need to acknowledge that everybody worked really hard during that period, you know, we need to recognise that and, you know, kind of be kind to colleagues and be kind to each other as we come out through this kind of process. The other thing for me was like sitting on an NHS board through the pandemic was really opened my eyes to, you know, the challenges that NHS staff are facing on a daily basis, and, you know, making sure from a non-exec position that we were seen as supportive, and, you know, really making sure that the staff and the senior teams were really well looked after was important during that period.
One of the interesting things about the return is, and I'm sure you're seeing this as much as we and others are, you know, lots of people are at lots of different stages of mentally returning, you know, so you've got some people who still can't quite get the idea into their head that they are going to come back, and others who are, you know, gung-ho all the time. And of course, there are a group of staff who've been on campus the whole time anyway, because they've had to be, because that's what their jobs are. And you know, those are, you know, particularly ones that deserve our thanks as well. But coping with those different constituencies is really challenging, I think, and trying to, you know, to be accommodating, recognizing that everyone feels slightly differently and has had different experiences. But I mean, it's quite difficult to come up with a kind of blanket approach to that, because on the one hand, you want to give people a clear steer that, you know, you've got to be at work at least some of the time physically, because that's what we need. Otherwise, we're an entirely online university, and that's a bit difficult. But then you've got to cope as well with, you know, with the concept of hybrid meetings, right? Where you've got some people in the room and some people online. Have you got kind of plans and strategies for dealing with that kind of mess?
Yeah, we tried to tackle it from a principal's perspective, particularly around you know, getting people onto campus. And you're absolutely right. We often talk about returning back to campus when actually there's been a massive cohort of staff that have been there all the way through. And, you know, we have definitely approached it from a principal's perspective, and absolutely reflecting what you said, we are a campus university. Our students come for a campus-based experience. I think the hybrid working environment, particularly around meetings, is something that is great in theory and really difficult to manage in practice. Just about the best example I've seen, or the kind of suggestion, is around having a horseshoe formation with the people at the on the screens at the bottom, but it never seems to work well. I think it works much better when either everybody's together or everybody's remote. And I think, you know, there are some real challenges around the tech for hybrid meetings.
Yeah, it's just not quite right, is it? And I'm absolutely with you. It's, if you've got 50-50, then it's a nightmare. You can cope with one or two online, but actually it is better to have everyone in the room or everyone online. Something always goes wrong.
And I always feel for like the staff that are supporting the meetings, running around trying to press buttons or turn microphones off or cameras on. And, you know, it just never seems as kind of good as if the kind of virtual. But, you know, the thing that I really like about virtual is, you know, particularly you're able to talk to colleagues across the sector probably much more than you would have done if you were and going to physical meetings or attending, you know, those kinds of conferences. I think there are many more opportunities to have that valuable interaction across the sector that you might not have had.
I completely agree. And I think that, you know, it's become a really valuable tool in the armory in terms of engagement in different ways. And some things work really well. I mean, for example, having you know, much bigger open meetings or town halls of large groups of staff suddenly becomes, you know, a realistic prospect for people scattered across a number of different campuses for, you know, for half an hour or 45 minutes in a way that would have been a huge logistical exercise in normal times, you know. So it's, you know, there are some things that are just really handy in a way that they weren't a couple of years ago.
Yeah, completely agree. And you can often do things at the end of a day that you might not have done before. You know, there's lots of kind of different seminars and open lectures now that just seem much more accessible.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. So you mentioned a bit about that kind of you know, the kind of national networking, national grouping, and you touched on that HESPA a bit earlier, right? For the uninitiated, then, describe what HESPA is and what they do, and your association with it.
So HESPA is obviously the sector body of choice. It is the Higher Education Strategic Planning Association. I am deputy chair and treasurer, so obviously clearly very biased. But what that does is it links together strategic planning teams from across the UK. Often strategic planning teams can have different remits. And particularly if you're in a small team, you know, you might not have that professional support around you within a university. You know, you might not have that person that completely understands your role. So HESPA is very much about providing that supportive network. We also try and liaise where we can with bodies like HESA and Office for Students, and, you know, particularly talking through some quite in-depth challenges around data and some of the impacts. You know, so you can imagine we're talking a lot at the minute about the B3 bear and some of the impacts around quality and standards.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, I'd say it's a safe space for data geeks to get together and talk about data. So it, obviously, it's amazing.
Well, no, I mean, it sounds a bit odd to say I've always had a fondness for Hesper, but I have, without obviously, you know, having any direct engagement at all. But, you know, I've always enjoyed working with colleagues who work in this space, and, you know, recognizing that they, you know, they often occupy a distinctive position within the university of professional services, right? Because they're trying to hold lots of rings, but they're also, you know, they also tend to get it in the net from lots of different people. So they, you know, they are and often a small and, you know, resilient group. So I often feel for colleagues, but I've also been very, very, you know, fond of them and full of admiration for the work that you and they do. So it is great that there is a national organization which supports them. So I just love the fact that, yeah, HESPA exists and, you know, people value it, because I think you do great stuff. And someone needs to talk to the regulators with authority or in language they understand, right? And you're able to do that, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful that, you know, particularly with HESA, we can have some quite detailed discussions around the metrics and some of the definitions that are used. And that's really, really helpful. I mean, obviously with OFS, you know, I have to say they are our regulator. You know, we will feed into, yeah, you know, different messages, but they are there to regulate that. You know, it's not always appropriate for them to listen on some of the things that we might have to say around the metrics. but also we do work with, you know, through the Higher Education Data Insight Group. It is a group that includes OFS and DfE and, you know, on occasion some of the league table compilers. So I think it is important that we're able to amplify the voice of individual strategic planners within the different universities, and we are able, where possible, to kind of speak with that truth around the metrics.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier again the you know, the range of, you know, consultations and regulatory things being thrown at the sector at the moment. There's more, of course, in the pipeline every day, it seems. But what regulation is obviously one part of the higher education landscape, one that, you know, personally afflicts me. But in terms of your bigger picture view of the future of our sector, I mean, what do you think are the big trends, the big issues ahead for us, or the big obstacles in our way? You know, we've got, obviously, you know, the government's announcements finally on AUGA the other day, and around lifelong learning entitlement, etc. What do you think are the big things that are going to assail us over the next couple of years?
I think there's something in, you know, when you look at the consultations in their totality, it's very difficult to disagree with them. Everybody wants fantastic student outcomes. Everybody wants high quality. So if you step right out of it and just kind of look at it, you know, it's very hard not to agree. But the other thing that we've got to remember is we have a diverse and broad sector, and actually our sector's world leading. You know, we have a really successful higher education sector. And if we just focus on the business of producing excellent research, great knowledge exchange, and transforming student lives, I'm not sure we'd be missing much in terms of anybody's agenda. So, you know, I think, you know, and this is just a personal view, is the sector is full of really, really, you know, amazingly brilliant people. But we shouldn't necessarily be in a reactive space. You know, if we just stick to those kind of core goals, we're going to pretty much fulfill everything that's asked of us. But I do think sometimes the sector, we're not very good at really talking about our strengths, particularly to some of our local communities. And some of our local communities might not always understand the value of having a university kind of in their town or in their city.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think where universities could maybe do more is getting that message across to communities that kind of surround our universities. I think we're very much better at maybe talking to some of the groups, but yeah, if we could definitely do that, I think that'd be a space to focus on.
I think that's absolutely right. Because, you know, one way or another, although we might have international aspirations and international activities, we are all grounded and rooted in communities. And, you know, our staff and our students live in those communities as well and are a part of them. And when there's a government narrative, which is about beating up universities, we need all the support we can get to justify our ability and our existence to carry on doing those things about research and student lives and knowledge exchange, as you say. Absolutely agree with that. But it's still tough, isn't it? You know, we're trying to do that whilst doing all the other stuff as well. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if I think about when I joined HE back in 2003, and I didn't expect that to be the golden age, you know. But now, it didn't feel like the golden age at the time. But now when I look back and, you know, I probably said it in other forums, we'll probably look back on those, that blue logo of, you know, script or whatever it was that said Hefke and go, oh yes, those were the days. But I think there is something in, you know, universities are right to be made, to be challenged and made, you know, a little bit uncomfortable, probably around social mobility and access and participation. There is probably more we can do around that. Yeah. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see John Blake and his direction of travel around what needs to happen. But I think, you know, again, we're doing good stuff. And actually, if we just kind of focus on the things that need to happen, then, you know, we'll meet kind of those outcomes.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And I think there is a sense of perspective and proportionality about these things, which often gets lost in all the all the fuss and the desire. I mean, it's also a government thing to want to direct universities. Every minister wants to tell us to do something, right? And if they're not doing that, it's kind of like they haven't got much to do. So they need to look busy, and it's just unfortunate that we feel the impact of that.
Yeah, you can't remember. I I've got that non-exec in the NHS, and that's another highly regulated kind of organisation with significant government intervention because it's so high up that kind of political agenda.
Absolutely, and they must look at us and think we've got it easy. Jackie, we need to stop there, but listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been hugely enjoyable speaking to you and learning a bit about the realities of the life of a director of strategy and your career history, if not path. But I shall always think of you in your steel toe cap boots and your hard hat and your high-vis jacket from now on, and treat you with even greater reverence and respect than I already do. So thank you ever so much for your time, Jackie.
Oh, thank you, Paul. That's been amazing. Really interesting.
That's all then from this episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. There will be another one along before you know it. And in the meantime, if you can't get enough of this kind of thing, there is an extensive back catalogue of previous conversations with University Registrars talking about lots of different stuff. Until the next time then.